smarterpodcasts.com, delivering sound advice.
Welcome to Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf, number 25. My name is Fred Green, and if you are searching for informed answers about when and how to make changes to your golf gear, or you have questions about what impact new golf products will make on your game, we're here to help. Joining me, as always, is Kenny Nicholson, technical specialist at Edwin Watts Golf and edwinwattsgolf.com. Hey, Kenny! How you doing,
hey,
bud?
Hey, Fred. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thanks for asking. You know, the topics we're going to be covering on today's episode are representation of questions we've received from golfers all over the world, and we encourage you to let us tackle yours. To submit a question, go to golfsmarter.com and click on the button labeled Ask Kenny. And if we use your question on the show, we'll send you a free Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf hat. Kenny, I got a bunch of interesting questions today. We're going to start with one from Tyrone Williams, and he is writing from Detroit, Michigan. He says, I'm left-hand dominant, breaking my left wrist twice as a teenager, and steering an automobile is really the only skill in which I rely on my left hand. Therefore, it feels really awkward to try and take my right hand out of my golf swing and putting stroke. Should I change and become a left-handed golfer?
No, if he's specifically talking about putting here, Fred.
Well, swinging the club and putting as well.
Yeah, I mean, if he's talking about putting, what I would do is go cross-handed before I'd switch to left-handed.
On putting.
On putting, yeah.
Yeah.
And that would take some of that out of there. I mean, that's a lot of people do that anyway, especially when they have the dreaded yips word.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the thing in switching to, if he's talking about switching to left-handed, you know, as far as total golf swing, that's, you know, very, very difficult to do. I've only seen one guy that I know of that was a right-handed golfer for most of his life and then changed to left-handed. Why? I don't know, but he's actually a pretty accomplished golfer both ways. You know, if you're a right-handed golfer, predominantly your right hand needs to be out of the swing, that's for sure. It only creates problems if you get it in there. You know, the key thing is here is he's just got to be honest with himself and try to find a swing that doesn't affect the wrist as much as it does. And also look at, you know, does it affect it after the swing or during the swing? Just like Tiger went in the U.S. Open and all the pain that he was in, it affected it after the swing. And is he causing adverse effects on the wrist with playing with it that way? The other option is obviously get it fixed. Yeah. I mean, I would think that take some time off and try to see, you know, see a doctor and see if you just need to take some time off. Maybe he needs some arthroscopic or something in there. Let the healing process take place and then go from there.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what do you think?
He says that if he does make the change, it seems that he would be more comfortable and have greater control pulling the clubs and putter down the target line with his right hand.
Well, that, I mean, trust me when I say this, it's fairly simple to take a practice swing left-handed. Let's say you play right-handed predominantly and you just take a practice swing left-handed. You know, it's fairly simple to do that, but I mean, Charles Barkley looks great on a practice swing. You know, there's something about putting that little white ball down there that makes all the difference in the world. Obviously, he's going to have to be receptive to his game suffering for a while. You know, I guess there's two choices here. You either switch to left-handed or you try to figure out what the problem is and see if you can get it corrected.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, Mickelson isn't a true left-handed person, though. Isn't that true that he's a right-handed person, but he plays left-handed because of how he was taught with his dad?
Yeah, because he did that mirror image thing.
Right, right.
He wanted to mirror his dad's swing, and his dad was right-handed, and he used to stand in front of his dad and then take his swing left-handed, which is correct. And I know, I mean, Blake Dean was an All-American outfielder at LSU this past year, first-team All-American. He's from here. He was fixing to leave. The reason I bring this up, he was fixing to leave to go play the Wood Bat League up in Cape Cod. And he came by here, and he wanted to get on a launch monitor before he went up there. And the kid mashes the ball, hit 21 home runs this year at LSU, and was a first-team All-American. But he gets on the launch monitor. I had it set up for left-handed. He goes, no, I hit the golf ball right-handed.
Wow.
And I tell you this. I mean, club head speed with a driver, 138.6. I was fairly impressed. But here's a kid. He said, I can actually probably swing the club a little bit harder left-handed, but I can't hit the ball as well.
Oh, interesting.
So, you know, he's predominantly left-handed but plays right-handed, where Mickelson's predominantly right-handed but plays left-handed. So, I mean, everybody's a little bit different there. I would be absolutely terrible at left-handed. I mean, I've tried to hit a golf ball left-handed, and I am terrible
at best. When you played baseball, were you a switch hitter?
And when I played baseball, I could switch hit, yeah, but that's different. For some reason, the mechanics in baseball are a lot less than they are in golf. You know, for me, hitting a baseball left-handed was not a difficult problem at all. I'm predominantly right-eye dominant, so I actually could pick up the ball a little bit better than I could from the right side. So for me, that was key in baseball. But in golf, it's just, for some reason, it's totally different. I mean, have you ever tried to hit a ball left-handed?
I can't even hit a baseball left-handed. I could never do that.
You can barely hit a golf ball right-handed, so I mean, you shooting 80 the other day was impressive.
Come on, but yeah, well, you know, I only played 9 holes.
Yeah.
A wood bat?
I'm just telling you, it's difficult. We'll get out there sometime on these demo days. You know, we'll take 4 or 5 of the sales guys out to the golf course and do a demo day, and every now and then we'll joke around and do a long drive with a left-handed driver for a Coke when we get back to the office, and plug for Coke, by the way. You owe me a drink. No, I'm kidding. But I mean, it's hilarious watching these guys that are very good golfers try to hit something left-handed, and I mean, it's terrible. It's absolutely disgusting to watch.
Yeah, I couldn't even think that way. I'd freak out. No way. What's a wood bat league?
A lot of the kids that are projected in baseball to go into the draft. He was a sophomore this year, so he'll be a junior next year, and just real quick, when you sign Division I baseball out of high school, let's say you get drafted out of high school and you decide to go to college, and you go Division I, you cannot be drafted again until after your junior season. Mm-hmm. That's why a lot of your good baseball players go junior college, because you can get drafted again at any time throughout your baseball career. But Wood Bat League are kids that are projected to go into the draft. Typically in the summertime, they'll go play in these wood bat leagues, and the Cape Cod League is probably the premier wood bat league in the nation for college baseball players.
Oh, because they've all been using these metal bats up to this point.
Yeah, and then they've got to make that transition to wood bats when they go to pros, and it gives the scouts a good opportunity to see how explosive the ball is in these wood bat leagues versus, you know, versus a traditional aluminum bat league.
Right. And
me personally, I would love to see the change.
Change of what?
Just going to wood bats. I mean, one, from the injury aspect of it. I mean, the baseball
You want to see college playing wood bat?
I think it would be neat. You know, you look at golf as a good perspective on wood versus metals. These metals have changed, and they've changed in bats as well with these composite or filament wound inside this aluminum, and they have spring-like effect just like golf clubs do. So the ball comes off the bat a lot quicker than it used to.
Well, and it's becoming very dangerous, actually.
Well, you had a third base coach get killed last year.
Yeah.
That's why in the major leagues you have base coaches that wear helmets now.
Right.
Because of that. It might have been a first base coach. So if you want to correct me on that, you can. But anyway, regardless, one of the base coaches got killed by a line drive.
Yeah.
You know, all right.
Well,
now golf will never transition back to that. I hope.
No. No, I hope not. I don't think so. All right, a little bit off topic. We apologize. So we're going to move on to Dwayne Dawson, who says that he's a devoted podcast listener of both Golf Smarter and Golf Better. He's in Huntsville, Alabama. And this is something that's close to your heart because he's got kids. He says, I've always bought the U.S. kids clubs for his two boys, who are now 12 and 6 years old, upgrading to the next color, age and size as they've grown. However, my 12-year-old is now at the stage of transition from kids' club to real clubs. I've been advised that he's probably not ready for the high-dollar complete sets and certainly not ready for the men's size and weight. Several golf club employees have suggested he would be ideally fitted for women's clubs. Like that would ever happen with a teenage boy. So for now, I have had him a set made from components, essentially ladies' clubs, that do not have ladies or women stamped anywhere on them. He's got a 5-wood, 7-wood, 6-iron, 8-iron pitching wedge. And he wants to know, is that a good transition decision, or was there a better option that he should have considered?
No, it's a topic, obviously, that I'm very familiar with, having a 12-year-old daughter. Holly made that transition this year as well, and I put her in the ladies' tailor-made Macella sets, which for some that can be a big expense. It's just an expensive set of golf clubs, but I was fortunate enough to be able to get her into those, and it really transitioned her game from that U.S. kids set, or that she was playing a Ping Moxie at the time and had outgrown it, and it made a huge difference in her golf ability. Let's hope that keeps up, because I'm playing in a golf tournament with her on Friday. So be her first golf tournament with her daddy, and
good luck.
She's very excited. But the funny thing is, there was a kid that was on the golf team with her, Chancer Teal. He just crushing the golf ball, and I noticed that he was using clubs that were just a little bit too small for him. So I talked to him. I said, Chancer, do me a favor. Don't ask me what club I'm getting you. I just want to see you hit this golf club. So I gave him Holly's Ladies TaylorMade Macella driver. Freddie increased 30 yards on his drive. And I did it with a GPS, so I knew exactly what the distance difference was. And it just goes to show you that he was in the wrong golf clubs, because he hadn't transitioned yet. His dad called me and said, hey, what was he hitting? Because he couldn't stop talking about it. So his dad, Bruce, came down here, and I told him, I said, Bruce, it doesn't say ladies on there anywhere. It just says TaylorMade Macella. Do not tell him they're ladies, and he won't care. And sure enough, he got him the set, and he played the rest of the golf season with it and played phenomenal. So right now at that age, ladies are where they need to be for two reasons. One, it's light enough for a kid that's in that 12 to 14, 15-year-old range that's not quite strong enough to handle the overall weight of a men's golf club. And two, it's also a little bit shorter by half an inch versus men's, which fits them better for their height. Definitely my suggestion for him would be go into a complete set of ladies. I wouldn't go with what he has, a 6, 8, and 9 or whatever. He's got it broken up. They're in that age range to where they will see a difference between hitting a 6 and a 7 iron in yardage, and they can start playing to different yardages and knowing what clubs to hit. If they're at 150, they know what club they need to grab out of the bag. So, definitely if he did components with ladies, he's on the right track there. I like to stay away from components. Obviously, I'm in the pro line business, but I think structurally they're a better golf club as well.
Okay. Well, I want to follow up with the kids conversation, because Nick Fuentes from Sayreville, New Jersey, writes to say, I'm 16 years old and I play on my school team. I've been pretty good, but my coach says I have to stop slicing the ball. Good coach, huh? I've learned how to play it, but it takes so much distance off of his drives. How can I solve this problem? First of all, get a coach that's going to be a little more encouraging and give him instruction, not tell him, stop that.
Obviously, the majority of all golfers out there slice the golf ball. It's in the over the 80% range. So he just falls within the norm. And I actually responded to him in an email and wanted to know, is it a slice or is it a fade? Because the most consistent golfers out there, whether it be the PGA Tour or the LPGA Tour, play a slight fade. It's a lot more consistent than a draw or a hook. But that's obviously can be more of a swing flaw than a club flaw.
Mm-hmm.
They do make offset drivers that help prevent slicing of the golf ball. And what they do, obviously, is a little bit offset from the shaft to help get your hands in front of the golf ball. The face can be a little bit more close, say 2 degrees instead of a degree or degree and a half with most drivers. And they have a higher moment of inertia. Most of them have the high MOI right now, but they typically have a little bit more heel weighted, which helps speed the toe up. So it will help, but the coach in that sense, in my opinion, should have worked with the kid on a swing characteristic. Could be the takeaway. A lot of people that slice the golf ball, they take the club real outside on the takeaway instead of bringing it more inside. And what that does, when you take it outside, you typically swing from outside in which creates that slice spin. But if he's playing a little bit of a fade, I would say stay with it and tell your coach, watch my scores drop, because they will once you learn how to play it.
And also, you can tell him, Nick, you can tell your coach to watch him drop while you're wearing your golf better Edwin Watts golf hat. And he'll know where this great information came from, because we're going to send him a hat. Hey, do you mind that question we got from Dwayne, who was asking about his two kids? Can I send him three hats so each of his kids, he can be match set with his kids? Can I send him
three? Yeah, sure.
Cool, thanks.
Sure, I'd love to do that.
All right. This one comes from Marty Diamond. Marty is M-A-R-D-I. It's a woman, and I know this because I've met her. I've met her out on the golf course once. She's in Corte Madera, California, and she wants to know how to decide what clubs, whether fairway woods versus hybrids versus irons. How does she make the comparison? Because she's not a consistent hitter. So she wants clubs that are going to be more forgiving for her, but doesn't really know which clubs to put in her bag. How would she be able to do this?
Well, I mean, consistent hitter is one thing, but yardage is the key thing there. A lot of ladies sets come with 5, 7, 9 iron and pitching wedge, because there's not going to be a big difference between the 5 and the 6 iron in total distance. But as far as forgiveness wise, obviously drivers and hybrids are the most forgiving clubs in the bag, just because the sole's a lot bigger and you're not going to take a big divot. When you get into the shorter irons is when you're going to see a big difference there. And for her, you know, I need to know more about what her abilities are and what her distances are. But typically what we find is Cobra, TaylorMade, and Callaway have ladies sets that are extremely forgiving, the Callaway Big Bertha being one of the most forgiving because of the sole diameter. It's a lot wider than a lot of the other soles out there, and it's a little more what we call cambered, so it's rounded. So if you tend to hit a little bit fat, it tends to bounce more than digging in. So and has a real low center of gravity to help get the ball airborne. What she needs to do is she needs to go to the golf course and try to demo some sets to find out what's actually working for her. But what she's trying to compare them to, I don't know what club she's playing now, but I'm sure that the newer clubs will far surpass what she has in technology and forgiveness.
I'm sure they will. And maybe she'll get back to us and give you some more details, and you can help her find exactly what she needs.
Yeah, Marty, shoot me an email, and I'll try to work with you on that.
Yeah, Marty, you can send it to me, and I'll make sure it gets to Kenny. It's easier that way, unless you have Kenny's email address, which you can find on the website at edwinwattsgolf.com. Mark Inofsky from Massachusetts. I'm from California, so for me it's Peabody, Massachusetts, but I know for a fact that it's actually Peabody, Mass. So Mark Inofsky, talking about inconsistent hitters, says, you've discussed many times about getting fitted and how the shaft makes all the difference in a club. The problem is I'm a 25 handicap and my swing can change from day to day depending on how I'm hitting the ball. If a club shaft fitting is done, how can I be sure that I am swinging the same way during the fitting versus on the driving range versus on the course? I've been thinking about this for 3 years and can't make a decision.
Well, I mean, the key thing there is if he can be consistent enough to get on a launch monitor and find out what shaft does fit him the best, the launch monitor is not going to lie to him. So when he gets on the golf course, he knows it's him and not the golf club. So you can make adjustments while you're on the driving range to try to figure out what the problem is. You have to be willing to sacrifice to go backwards when you're working on a swing characteristics. Your scores are going to suffer because you're changing what you're doing. Me, for an example, I don't get to play as much as I used to, and I definitely don't practice as much as I used to. So when I go play in a golf tournament or go to the golf course to play, I typically go on the driving range and find how am I hitting the ball that day, and I play with what I have on any given day. I mean, I'm a little bit more consistent than he is, obviously, and can make that adjustment. But if he gets fitted, he has that confidence in knowing that I do have the right products in my bag. I need to make sure that I'm have the ability to go out there and practice and work on my game just a little bit more. But play with what you have that day. If it changes that often, I definitely try to go out there and play with what you have working for you on any given day.
So this is a revelation for me. When he talks about the inconsistency, the inconsistency is really in the results of the ball flight, it really is, his swing is going to be fairly consistent, right, as far as swing speed and in to out or out to in. It's just going to be the results of the where the ball goes is going to be different. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, you're obviously, if the swing was exactly the same every time, the PGA Tour guys would be shooting 18 under every time they go out there.
Exactly.
You know, it just changes when you go out there from day to day. The little nuances or the way the ball's coming off the club face or anything can change on any given day. You know, so that's why, you know, you go out there and you figure out, you know, kind of how you're hitting the ball on that day and play with what you have. You know, when you're a 25 handicap, you're not going to be consistent enough to really say, hey, it's the golf club that has the real malfunction here. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, there's a swing flaw there that needs to be worked on. And try not to get too much out of it at one time. You know, if several parts of your game are not performing properly, you know, work on different aspects of the game. Don't try to go out there and solve the whole thing at one time. If you're slicing the golf ball, let's try to get you in play a little bit more by getting the ball, you know, hitting the ball a little bit straighter. That's one aspect that you can accomplish. If you're suffering around the greens, obviously that's the one part that's fairly free at most golf courses where you can go practice chipping and putting. You know, grasp a hold of different aspects of the game that are suffering and try to accomplish, you know, each goal at a time and try not to solve every solution on one day.
You know, I bet you that he can get his handicap from a 25 to a 20 in no time at all if he just believes in his swing. You know, whether it may not be the greatest swing ever, but if he just goes, you know, he doesn't have to question it after every time he hits the ball. It's like, okay, this is my swing. I'll be okay. This is what I'm going to do. If he has, that'll increase his confidence and it's going to lower his handicap.
Well, I mean, how many times have you been watching the PGA Tour or when they mic a caddy or something, and he gives him a club or a yardage, and he tells him, just trust it.
Yeah.
It's a perfect example of just trust your swing.
Yeah.
And go with it. I love, you know, working with guys that are, you know, 20, 25 handicaps because you see instant results.
Mm-hmm.
You know, working with a low-to-scratch golfer, you're not going to see those results all the time. So working with a higher handicap, you're going to be able to accomplish a lot more immediately than you are with somebody that's a little bit better. So, yeah, I mean, trusting the swing has a lot to do with it. You got to, you know, a perfect example. Last week I was playing in a golf tournament on a par five, and, you know, I hit it in the rough just a little bit, and I had 185 yards to the flag over water, a little bit of an awkward stance there. And I decided, you know, it was a match play tournament, and the guy I was playing had to lay up, so I'm going to go ahead and go for it. And that's the one thing I told myself, just trust what you have. And I ended up hitting a good shot, but at the same time, the fear of hitting it in the water or leaving it short or something, I didn't let it overtake me. Mm-hmm. You know, I knew that I just wanted to trust what I had working for me that day. And it worked out, you know, fine on that hole. So,
well, it's such a valid point that golf is not a game of perfection. Or if it was, it would be much more boring to watch and to play. Things are going to happen every time you hit the ball, and that's out of your control. Once it leaves the club head, it's out of your control. So just go with it, feel good about it, and keep moving.
Yeah, and try to get rid of the bad shots immediately. I mean, if you hit it in a bunker, and obviously that's not where you're aiming, just get over it, you know, and try to get to the next shot and focus on that shot. You know, quit worrying about why you hit it there, because guess what? It's there, and you're not going to be able to change that fact. So where I see a big problem with guys that are, you know, higher handicaps or even low handicaps, when they hit a big shot and they dwell on it and they let it overtake them, mm-hmm. Their game's going to suffer.
Yep.
You know, hey, approach every shot, you know, as a new shot, and don't worry about, you know, how you got there or why you got there.
I mean, it
did it to me last week. You know, I started out bad, and I let it wear on me for four or five holes, and my game suffered. And it does that with every person that's out there, and they let the bad shots overtake them, and they're not focusing on the shot that they're actually hitting at the time. So
I was playing last week. I was playing last week with a listener, actually, a guy named Jay Shea, who invited me to come play with him. And he gave me a piece of advice that I thought was fabulous, which was never follow a bad shot with a stupid shot.
Yeah, and that's what happens a lot.
I mean, we get so frustrated. It's like, oh, I'm just going to go for it. Well, you know, Golf Smarter is not just the name of a show. It's really a call to action here. But it's such a great piece of advice. If you have a bad shot, don't get frustrated and just keep whacking at it. Now play smarter a little bit. You know, don't do something stupid afterwards.
It all falls into course management.
Yeah.
You know, if you've hit a bad shot in the woods, is the best play to try to rope hook a 5-iron from 150 yards, or is it to punch it back out and play and hit a wedge?
Yeah.
You know, that's what we talk about a lot on the show is Golf Smarter. That's why the show is called Golf Smarter, and it's 100% correct. You know, let go of the bad shot, and like you say, do not follow it up with a stupid shot.
Well, this one's called Golf Better, and that's because we give away free stuff, and today... What a transition. Today, we're giving away, from our last program, the Odyssey XG Sabertooth Putter. And over the last few weeks, we received 249 entries, and we have sorted them randomly. And you, my friend, get to be the one who announces the winner, because you have to pick a number between 1 and 249. You may pick number 1, you may pick number 249. But the number you're going to select is...
I'm going to defer. I have one of my sales guys in here who was...
Who's hiding over there in the corner? I'm watching. All I see is a shoulder. Who is that?
That's John Leslie.
Hey, John, poke your head over to your left a little bit.
There
you are.
Actually,
hi, John.
he actually was a PGA professional and a Class A teaching professional. So
I hope he agrees with what you've been saying the last few minutes.
I feel like I have my mentor in here.
So pick a number between 1 and 249.
Let's go 180.
All right, we're going to go with number 180, and that is going to come out of Illinois from Winthrop Harbor. Winthrop Harbor, and our winner is, oh, you did this to me on purpose, didn't you? Peter Jakubowicz.
Very good.
Yeah, and it's spelled J-A-K-U-B-O-W-I-C-Z. I hope it's pronounced Jakubowicz. Peter, congratulations. You have just won yourself a new Odyssey XG Sabertooth Putter.
Congratulations, Peter. Hopefully you can putt with it as good as Rocco.
Yeah, exactly. What Rocco is using on it. And interestingly enough, a friend of mine who recently had his 60th birthday was playing with one this week. I was playing with him. And he loves it because he doesn't have to bend over to pick up the ball. It doesn't go. He never putts it in the hole anyway. Never goes in, but he doesn't. It's real easy to scoop the ball up with that putter. So there you go, Peter. Congratulations.
Congratulations. Hopefully that will turn into nice results on the golf course.
It worked for Rocco.
Yeah.
Talking about working for somebody, you and I talked about what our next giveaway is going to be, and you pulled out the driver that Patrick Harrington was using at the British Open, huh?
Yeah, I did. I figured let's spin off of British Open winner, back-to-back, I might add. And obviously, he hit his pretty good. So I figured, why not give one of these away to one of our lucky listeners?
And it is a Wilson Staff spine driver. Can you tell us a little bit about this club?
I mean, we've demoed all these products. I can tell you it's a very explosive driver. I mean, as far as shape-wise, the crown itself is fairly unique. It's a little bit hard to describe, but you'd have to go on our site to actually see what it looks like. I can read you what they say. Powered by the innovative crown superstructure and unique perimeter weighting, and that superstructure is what they're talking about. The spine driver explores today's new driver geometry, which all of them are changing in these new shapes, whether they're square or triangular shape. Almost square in a sense. What that does is create a higher moment of inertia, which gives you a more stable driver. So if you're hitting it off the heel or the toe, you're going to see the driver tends to stay in the middle of the fairway a little bit more, hopefully. So definitely will be a great prize for one of the lucky listeners out there, and excited to get some feedback on what they think.
Awesome. Thank you for doing that. The deadline for entry is Tuesday, August 5th, 2008. And to enter, go to golfsmarter.com and click on the word contest. Once there, fill out the shipping information and your verification code and click submit. And while you're on that page, you can see all the prizes that we've given away to listeners from all over the world over the last, almost 2 years now, Kenny. It's an amazing list of great products that Edwin Watts Golf has supplied for these contest giveaway. And We'd like to thank you very much for listening to Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf Podcast and encourage you to make sure you have a free subscription to the show so that each episode downloads to your computer automatically. And then when you plug on iTunes or wherever you get your show, it's going to automatically be there for you to listen so you can be updated with this information that Kenny has. And we also have many episodes with some of the best names in the industry as far as engineering and research and development to talk about the new products that come along. We've got a lot of exciting shows coming up in the next few months. Can we give any hints, Kenny, on who's going to be coming up?
Yeah, I mean, Bob Vokey's one of those that's going to be coming up, obviously.
I'm glad you said it. I didn't, but I've been so excited that we're going to have Bob Vokey come on, talk about
wedges. Yeah, obviously with Vokey wedges. John Ashworth. Obviously if you're in golf and watch golf, you've seen Ashworth apparel out there. Those are a couple of the names that, that we've got coming up in the very near future that we're very excited about and, glad that, these guys have decided to partner with us and be a part of the program. They believe in it like we do. I want to make another quick announcement out there. We'll have another show prior to this, but our new website, edwinwattsgolf.com, is going to be launching on August 14th, something we've been working very hard on and are very excited to see the results finally starting to take place. So I look for something new with Edwin Watts Golf out there.
Awesome. Oh, wow. Is that going to be announced in the catalog as well, hopefully?
It will be announced in the catalog, but obviously the website will launch before the next catalog, so we're going to try to get the word out there to all of our listeners, and hopefully they can pass the word to their friends and golfing comrades.
Yeah, we'll keep people
and don't forget to leave.
That.
Yeah, don't forget to if you like the show, or even if you don't like the show, write reviews on iTunes. We welcome all comers, and hey, tell us what you think. It gives us great credibility out there.
Yeah. Well, if it's not incentive enough, as a listener, you receive 10% discount and free shipping on your purchases from edwinwattsgolf.com. Mostly, we've had some situations where people walk into stores asking for their Golf Smarter and Golf Better discounts, but mostly that's the .com stuff because the stores aren't always up to speed. The salesmen
obviously they have new people that come in
exactly.
A little more than we do, and they might not know about it at the time. We can make that happen for you. That's not a problem. But if you order online or through one of our sales professionals, they're all well aware of the discounts. Obviously, some restrictions apply.
Yeah,
it's free shipping in the continental United States. If you're ordering internationally, we'll take care of your discount and charge you whatever it costs us to ship the product over to you. And which we have a very large international following, which we absolutely love. So
yeah, it's very cool. Well, to get all the information on how you can get your discounts and free shipping, go to golfbetterpodcast.com and click, and then there's a line that says click here for more info about your discount. It'll give you all the details on it. And there's a current checkout code. We change this every few months. The current code will last through September 1st, 2008, and that code is GBetter1, the numeral 1. So it's the letter G, the word better, and the numeral 1, GBetter1, and that will get you your 10% discount. GolfSmarter.com is now home to 22 golf podcasts each month. Golf Smarter is published every week. Golf Smarter Tips is 4 times a week. And Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf is every other week. The Golf Smarter blog is our program guide and the easiest way for you to keep updated on what each show is all about. We've also been using the Golf Smarter blog to let you know what interviews are coming up so that if you can submit your own questions for our guests as well. It's very cool, and it's been working a lot. We tell you the person's name and put links to their website so you can review the website and then submit your own questions. So as Kenny announced, Bob Vokey's going to be coming up. We'd love to hear from you if you have questions. Just click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com and submit your question. Just say it is for Bob Vokey or for John Ashworth, and we'll keep those questions online. They love to answer those questions too. So thank you. But check it all out. Kenny, thanks so much. That was a lot of fun. Appreciate you doing another Ask Kenny, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Thank you very much, Fred.
Thanks again for your questions and for listening, and we'll talk to you in a couple weeks for another episode of Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf.